Hi, Martin. I am so excited to talk to you today about the Midnight Sky. I have been such an admirer of yours and your work ever since Harry Brown. And you and I actually talked all those years ago about Harry Brown. And since then, you did a beautiful, beautiful job for Ewan McGregor with American Pastoral. And now here you are teaming up with George Clooney yet again. For the Midnight Sky. And I have to tell you, as soon as I finished watching the film, I immediately emailed the publicist for the film and said, masterful. This film is masterful on multiple levels, not the least of which is your cinematography leading the charge with emotionality, with painting us an intimate portrait on this huge canvas. You take us into different worlds, different emotions, different experiences. Your work is exquisite. So let me not waste any time and let's just jump into where do you start with a film like this? How do you start with a film like this, in an unforgiving country, in essentially winter time, like Iceland, you're tackling wind, snow, ice, frigid temperatures. Then you're taking us into zero gravity situations, on a spaceship, and we have flashbacks and we have underwater sequences. Where? How do you even approach this?
We looked at science fiction films. We looked at, because there's so many of them and so many masterfully done ones. Then we went to Iceland. We went into Iceland, I think, in early August to see the locations, to get a sense of the space we're living in, or our actors or characters live in. I think you approach it slowly by slowly. You look at a lot of science fiction. You look at some survivor stories, some stories in the ice, because it was clear that, I think Arctic is tricky because there's a, we didn't want it to be just bluish cold. We wanted it to be more life, close to what we saw. For real, the space was a constant development because Jim Bissell came up with the organic design of the interiors and then the exteriors, so it looked more like a printed, something they could print in space, the structure of the spaceship, rather than, a lot of matter being shot up into space and assembled, like in most of the films. And one came to the other, and then we realized it could be two very different worlds, has to be two different, very different worlds, the space and the earth, by nature. We introduced some colors in the interiors, and little by little, we got there.
Yeah, the whole thing is just exquisite, and the different canvases that you have. Let me talk about the ship first, and I'm glad you mentioned Bissell because I think that production design is gorgeous, especially in the command center with that whole back wall. It's three-dimensional, and it looks like the synaptic nerves in the brain connecting with that design. But then everything looks like with the lighting, it looks like the lighting in there is worked into the production design, much as what Alwyn Kuchler did for Danny Boyle in Sunshine, actually built in LEDs and things. And I'm wondering if you did something similar here, because it definitely gives that gorgeous tone and look.
What we did is when I knew, as early on, we had Jim did various 3D designs of models of the spaceship so we could put on goggles and walk through them. I realized, and also we built some of the spaceship, we built three stories high. And So they were very tiny places, and so I've asked them find occasions for me where we can put LED lighting in. Yes, there's miles of LEDs in there, and all of them were RGBW, so we could change the colors wherever we wanted, however we wanted. So, you know, when there's an alarm coming up, I never wanted to tell George, oh, you can't point the camera this way because there's I need some light here. We always had the ability to shoot 360 because there was not so much space anyway, and the lighting was very much built into the set.
You know, how did you handle, because there's a lot of zero gravity work done in the spaceship yeah. itself and the spacewalk. And I realize part of it may be CG, but knowing Clooney, he loves in camera as much as possible. So I'm curious how much of this was in camera and what challenges that presented, especially where we need to see people spinning around in the ship.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. You know, sometimes the set will be CG extended, and what we did is for something like the spacewalk and the airlock, when Maya dies, we did a previs. So we had a virtual camera. We did various sessions where we were walking around with an iPad, sometimes with goggles, and then finding shots. Stephen then took them and edited them. We reviewed, we did another session. And that way we had a pretty good idea of what we wanted to do in camera, what we wanted to do in CG. And we had also, we established the idea of, you know, when we're in space, when we're in zero gravity, the camera is always floating. It's never settled. There's no clear bottom line of frame because it's always rotating, it's always drifting, you never settle. Mm-hmm. And that's something we wanted to introduce and plan while shooting, so the groups knew how to do it. We did a lot of space work in Steadicam, so we built platforms for my Steadicam operator to walk along. When it's two people in the foreground, usually they are for real, and the third person in the background, quite far away, would be in CG. So it was all very well planned.
Well, how long was the pre-production on this one because of all this meticulous detail?
I was on it, I think, 10 or 11 weeks before we started shooting.
Wow.
So it's not like... Yeah, and we started shooting in Iceland. So in Iceland, then we could fit in more sessions to do more of the VR previs work. Mm-hmm. You know, we did that on weekends and stuff. But no, it's not like this is also, this is something, you know, we watched Gravity. George, of course, never wanted to copy Gravity because mm-hmm. that's a masterpiece in its own. And then he knew that some of the shots they spend a year on, and we would never have that time anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, let's jump in over into Iceland here since you started shooting in Iceland. Wow, could Georgia picked any harsher location for you to go to shoot? How do you even set up shots and do blocking or do anything in those exteriors, especially with those winds? And of course, as we all know, white on white snow and whiteouts, it's like a cinematographer's nightmare for getting texture and delineation and showing anything. But we see and feel the swirl of the wind during some of these whiteout conditions. How do you set up to shoot in a blizzard condition like this? Because it just amazes me, Martin.
You pick up the camera and you put it on the shoulder. That was as basic as that. When we were planning, we were thinking, you know, how can we get some light up there? How can we get some, you know, maybe negative fill or something? But then when we went there, it was just clear that would be too rough to do that in the, especially when we had the stormy winds and the snow, you know, that was impossible. So we were like, basically, we gathered our crew, we came together at a base camp. They had these jeeps with the giant tires, which could drive on the glacier. We would pack our stuff, we would get onto the glacier. We always had two cameras, mainly handheld, sometimes steadicam when wind would allow.
Mm-hmm.
We shot a couple of things with a Hexatron, which is a crane which has its own wheel base and you can drive with it on the glacier. We did that for two or three shots. But I think you have to react to what's there, and then yes, it limits you, but you get the realism of it. And then, you know, if we had tried to create that snowstorm in the studio, we would, without seeing how bad the storm is out there, we would have done very different. And then I think that was the benefit of it. Mm-hmm. Because we did a few shots in the studio, basically because we had a seven-year-old girl and limited time of daylight. So that's why we had to finish a couple of shots in the studio of the snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And but since we'd seen it for real, we knew how to do it.
Wow. Yeah, your exterior shots out in the snow are just absolutely mind-boggling. I sat there gobsmacked with my mouth hanging open watching this, because as we're seeing the ferocity that you've captured, that the lens has captured, it makes you feel very minuscule, very small, and puts us into the sense of isolation and the desolation of George's character. But it also shows us the beauty and the majesty. And you understand the awe that somebody like his character would have with the stars and with nature. And it just, you wouldn't get that same sensation or feeling without your work here, Martin. It really is exquisite.
Well, thank you very much.
You know, you've also got now worthy, because you've very important part of the film is going out on the snow runners, on the snowmobile, as an escape from the lab. Now, was that done practically in Iceland, or was that done at Shepperton?
No, everything on the snowmobile is practically. We had also a tracking vehicle where we had a stabilized head on, and we were traveling with them. That's when they arrived. When they arrive at this pot, which then later sinks at night,
mm-hmm.
that's for real. And then, you know, everything which happens at night is in the studio. But them arriving, them driving, we had a couple of snowmobiles. We rigged cameras to a snowmobile when George is riding it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also George for real riding it in Iceland. You know, when his beard is frozen and we're in Iceland, it's real ice.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, and the whole idea that insurance even let George get on a snowmobile, the whole world is well aware of things that happen to George when he does things.
The Icelandic guys were very nervous, because when we were at this whiteout thing and we asked them, him and the girl, to walk as far, so we almost didn't see them anymore. That made the Icelandic guys really, really nervous, because they were like, what if they go the wrong direction? We know, you know, it would take some time to find them.
Oh my.
Because in the snowstorm, there's this moment when they appear out of the snow, and then that's basically the limit of visibility. So we asked them to go a little bit further and come at us. And that was basically, that made our Icelandic guys a bit nervous.
Oh my God. Yeah, I can see that. Oh, wow. Plus, you also don't know if somebody's going to be falling through an ice floe or something. Oh,
No, they had always they always had GPS navigation systems which would tell where the crevices are and all of that, and they were very very well prepared. And then, but it's still, I mean, it's rough. It was rough then.
Wow, did the weather present any difficulties for your equipment? I know I've talked, spoken with many cinematographers over the years where they've been down in Africa and a dust storm has come up, and that just, it gets everywhere, and you've got to protect the housing with plastic and seal it, and with cold, cameras can freeze up, the batteries can freeze up. So I'm curious what Mother Nature did, how she affected your equipment.
It's similar to dust, it's just water. Because if you have a gap in there, and if you know, you pack the cameras up in plastic, cover them a lot. If you want to change a lens, it probably takes 20 minutes because you have to unpack, change a lens, and pack it up again. So sometimes you would try to say, okay, give me this lens on this camera, this lens on that camera, and then you work with those two lenses because you don't want to change too much, and it takes very long. But it's the same. It's basically the same principle. The snow with the strong winds gets everywhere. I had my light meter frozen because I put it in my pocket of my jacket and it was not properly sealed, and it was snow filled it up, and it was like I had a frozen light meter.
Oh my God. You know, how much daylight did you actually have to shoot there? Because I know so close to the North Pole. And light, I don't know what time of year you were filming. Was it during the perpetual, 24/7 daylight, or were we going into nighttime for the bigger part of the day?
We were there in October, so we had probably from 8 to 3, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that long.
And then you're also dealing with a young girl, so you've got even more limited hours because of what she's allowed to work. Wow.
Yes, exactly. We had a double. We had a small lady who helped us, who was standing in for her. But, you know, it's a grown-up. She would walk differently. So I think almost always we used Kaylin, the little girl.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, she is luminous on camera. The way some of those frontals, the full facials that you capture of her, the look on her face, the expressiveness, absolutely, it just pulls at your heart. Absolutely beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. And if you imagine, I love it when she says the four words she says in there, the only time she speaks, it's like, really gets you.
Yeah. Because the whole time you're thinking, okay, maybe she is mute, maybe. And so it falls on her eyes to communicate, and boy, does she. And you just capture it beautifully. You know, going into the lab, the base lab, that's another whole different lighting scheme that we have. You've got a lot more tech. It's very cluttered. It's very crowded. What was your approach in there?
Sorry, where do you say?
In the actual base lab where George's character starts, where they're housing everybody, that whole thing where everybody's been living and now they've evacuated and he's left.
There we had a couple. This was set in Shepparton. We shot that in Shepparton. We had this set was built over two stages, and we used the view out of the windows. We used this big LED screen system from ILM, the Unreal Engine, I think it's called, where we projected plates which we had shot in Iceland. So what you see out of the windows is basically the rear view which we shot 6 weeks before we started shooting in the studio. We shot that in Iceland. Again, I like to start with a lot of practicals and then add and fill into that. And then We used a lot of Astera light tubes, so we could dim everything everywhere and then get it bright when we needed it. I think that was more like also the station, Babu station should look, we always wanted that to look in contrast to the spaceship, that should have been there for 20, 30 years,
mm-hmm.
whereas the spaceship needs to be the modern thing.
Yeah, I love the ground, the base station on the ground. It is so lived in. You see the technology, you feel the technology, but you feel the humanity that surrounds it. And you really capture that well. And I love how you hold a lot of shots. You just hold them. There's no directing this. George doesn't have you rushing through shots. It's very, the shots are held so that the impact of the loneliness or the panic, so you capture that on his face or in the atmosphere, and it really fuels the emotionality of this story. It's just so well done, Martin.
Oh, thank you. The beauty of this story is basically that it's because you have all the big canvases, you have space, you have the Arctic, but in between you have very intimate scenes, and we chose to shoot on 65mm digital. So we use Alexa 65s, and that's very beautiful because you get all this detail in the landscapes, but also when you shoot people, you have to get close with your lens to mm-hmm. get a good shot. And then, it's almost like the face becomes a landscape.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
George also wanted, he never wanted to rush the film. He wanted to have it slow and then have time with the people, see the faces and really play out those intimate moments.
Yeah, it just, that aspect, it is so powerful, and you really can. Some of those shots you have on his face, some of the three-quarter shots, three-quarter profiles, are just, you just look at the life lived and the sadness and the burden. We feel the burden on his face, and it's very interesting emotion that you get watching it. But it's because of what you captured. You know, what lenses did you use on this one to go with the Alexa?
We had the DNA lenses from Arri. So we did the, what's it called? Arri DNA. It's their 65mm lenses, and they're very beautiful. We used those. We had them detuned. We shot a couple of sequences. We shot with Alexa Mini LFs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see any fall off from these lenses.
Don't see what?
I don't see any fall off on the edges with these lenses.
Oh, there is. we asked them to add some of that into it.
Ah. The other canvas you got to play with here, Martin, are the flashbacks. And you've got the two very powerful flashback sequences. The first one where he is lecturing. And the power and the fact that man is so small set in that stadium, that lecture hall, is stunning. And you really give us an interesting lighting there with the bluish black, like the night sky, that bathes everything but for the stage where he is speaking. And how did you approach that? Because there again, we have grandeur and a man who is so small.
That scene, we basically wanted to, it's a little bit like it's a mirror to space. So he's in his own space. He's in his head space, but he's basically in his own world, and the world is quite big, what he imagines around him. So we wanted to show that, and we wanted to also in the flashbacks, we wanted that to look as if it's a little bit older. Maybe it's this year, maybe it was a couple of years ago, but that's basically, we show that this is old by adding more film grain to it, and then it's a bit more monochrome, it's a bit warmer, these memories. That's how we did this.
And of course, then the departure scene, the exterior, the outside, was that's just beautiful sunlight, natural light, life, living. And you've got a gorgeous two shot there, but you've got, I like the focal length in that sequence. So we really see what's behind, but the two of them are at the forefront as she then walks away and is moving on with her life. Just, you give us so many looks, but everything boils down to the intimacy and human connection amid the grandeur of the world, of the galaxy. And it's just exquisitely done, Martin.
Oh, thank you very much. You like it.
Oh, I love it. I've got to ask you, what is this magic of working with George Clooney? This is your third time with George.
Yeah, my second time with him as a director.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, what I love is that he's basically, I don't know, he chooses his people, and once he chooses his people, he trusts them, and it's very, he's confident. He's also, he doesn't shoot a lot of coverage. He doesn't change his mind very much. He's very confident filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he trusts you. So that gives you confidence to try things and to, you're not second guessing. It's very clear where he wants to go. What he as an actor, well, he's been acting so much, he's been directing so much, and so he knows what the story is about. That makes it easy for us to, take a stand in the situation, and you always know what the scene is about,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one thing I didn't ask you about was all of the underwater work, which obviously was done in a tank, hopefully.
Yeah. I don't think you could do that in. I don't think you could do that in the Arctic.
I don't think so. Working in a tank, did that present any kind of unusual challenges in this one, or was this just pretty much straight underwater photography for that?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here, Martin. Can you hear?
Oh, sorry. I didn't get that last one. So the underwater?
Yeah, it looked like a pretty straightforward kind of underwater shoot. In the tank, was that how that played out? Because here again, you have some beautiful light source coming in from one direction, which is where the snowmobile and he went into the water. So I'm curious, were there any challenges with that, or was that pretty straightforward shooting within the tank?
We did basically. It is pretty straightforward because we tried to give. It's dark, it's at night in the Arctic, so maybe there's a little bit of moonlight, but we didn't want to have rays of light coming in from the top. So the strongest light source we have in the picture is basically the light of the snowmobile. So I had my electric department change that light and figure out how they can seal it and dim it so it fades out it's his life support.
Mm-hmm.
The machine, which goes away, which he can't grasp, is his life. And then we know then, we always should know that, without it, he would die. So the life fades away as this thing moves away from him. So, that was the main thing we wanted to have. That's the strongest light source. That's what would would have kept him alive, but it doesn't.
Yeah, no, it's very effectively shot. Very effectively shot. You know, what did you... I mean, this is the grandest landscape canvas that you've played with, I think, in your career. What did you take away from this? What did you learn about yourself as a cinematographer that you'll take forward into your future projects after what you've experienced with The Midnight Sky?
Maybe the confidence that I think I could do almost anything. We've done space, we've done the Arctic, we've done, you know, underwater. I think there's no limits. And then that's what I loved about this project. The challenge was so broad, and in every we got something personal out of it, which I like a lot.
Well, for my money, this is just masterful. It truly is masterful on so many levels, Martin, but it is your cinematography that leads the way on this one, I gotta tell you.
Thank you very much.
Just so well done. Martin, I can't thank you enough for talking to me this morning about The Midnight Sky. This is such a pleasure and such a joy.
Thank you. Thank you for the interest. Thank you for your nice words. I'm very happy you like the film.
Oh, love it. I love it. And I can't wait to talk to you again. Are you working on anything now? Being with COVID and lockdown, I know Germany is now you're back in lockdown again.
Yeah.
Are you able to work on, do pre-production on anything right now, or are you just kind of waiting?
I'm doing George's next film. I'm supposed to go to Boston in January to work on The Tender Bar with him.
A fourth film with George Clooney. Aren't you a lucky man? Wow.
I am indeed.
Ah, well, I will certainly look forward to that one. And I hope I get to talk to you again about that when it comes out.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Martin. Have a wonderful day and evening.
And you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.